You're listening to the Food Talk Show. Hello there, my name's Sue Nelson, and this is the Food Talk Show. I'm joined by Guy Routledge of Food Rush. Hello.
Hello. That was very softly spoken.
That's not like me, is it?
You're always trying to throw us off now, yeah. Sue, so we're getting prepared for it.
And also, Ollie Lloyd from Great British Chefs, and I'm hoping that Ollie's not going to mention Flash the Tortoise this week.
We're going to change.
Oh, we had a good old laugh last week about his tortoise.
Can't believe he's got a tortoise. So, hi, Ollie.
Hi, nice to see you.
Yes, good. And we've got a really nice guest here called Paolo Zanelli.
It's a fantastic name.
That's correct.
Yeah, it's better than Sue Nelson. That's boring. Paolo Zanelli. Although my daughter said to me that I should change my name if I'm on the radio
and
by depot and not have Nelson.
And instead?
She said I should be called Mrs. Flay instead of Mrs. Nelson. Because then I'd be Sue Flay. See, and I thought that was actually quite good.
That took me a while. Mm-mm. In fact, I didn't even get it at all.
Well, don't you think Sue Flay would be quite good?
That's so cheesy. Cheesy Sue Flay. Mm.
But Mrs. Flay would be F-L-A-Y, just so that people didn't get it until they said it. See, I think that's quite amusing. Carry on. So today we're talking about wine. It's one of my favourite subjects. The reason why Paolo's here is because he started up something called Pulp Wine. And I believe that Pulp Wine is a wine club for people who don't do wine clubs.
That's correct.
So I belong to the Wine Society. I did do Virgin Wines, done the Times Wine
Club. Yeah, I tried Virgin Wines, wasn't a huge fan, to be honest.
No, nor me. And I belong to the Wine Society because I don't know, I just feel I should. But I don't actually order anything off it.
Do you feel obligated to be a member of a Wine Society?
Well, I don't know.
It's just like being a member of the National Trust.
Yes, that's how I look at it.
Don't visit houses, but I'm contributing to society.
That's how I feel about the Wine Society, because it is like a cooperative thing, isn't it? You don't know anything about it.
I'm not a member of the Wine Society.
Nor am I. Okay. Although I am a member of three different wine clubs. Maybe I drink too much.
Mention them. What are they?
So one is with my local wine merchant called Unwind in Tooting. Fantastic little venue in the Tooting market. If anyone happens to be in the area, we also have Naked Wines.
Use them sometimes.
Which is kind of, I think, you know, is one of the more, you know, larger scale popular ones, similar to Virgin Wines. You pay in like £20 a month, and then eventually they send you an email saying you've got enough money in your account to buy a box of wine. Do you want some?
Yeah.
And yeah, always the answer is yes.
Yeah.
And then we also have a wine dealer called from a company called Piroth. I never know how you pronounce it actually, but so a guy kind of annoys us on the phone once every few months saying, do you want to buy some more wine?
So Paolo,
I'm sorry, the dealer, he's a specialist in a particular area or?
No, I just think he likes phoning people and asking for money.
Right. Mm.
But they produce some really, really good
he's
quality.
He's a producer though? Yes.
Right. They're internationally, I think they're one of the biggest producers of fine wine.
Hmm. So, Paolo, what is wrong with all these wine clubs? I mean, we're not enthusing much, are we?
Well, the thing that we believe is wrong is the fact that when you are confronted with the wine aisle, there is so much choice that it's very, very difficult to figure out which one you got to take. So which wine is the right wine for you? And that is a little bit the problem we're trying to solve for our customers. So we're trying to give you a bit the nuts and bolts of wine so that you build up a little bit your knowledge. But most importantly, with us, you get to try different wines off the beaten path that make you discover wine and make you discover your personal taste.
So broaden your taste. Mm.
Exactly.
Right.
And thing doesn't end up just with a delivery wine, because that is part of it. I mean, there is a wine subscription. There are several. You have mentioned them. But we've put together an online platform where all the explanations about wine are delivered, but most importantly is where we listen to your opinions about wine. So for every wine that you try with us, you give us your ratings. We look through your ratings and we build your personal wine ID. So something that's personalized to you so that we can bring you wines that fit your taste.
So it's like Spotify of wine.
Spot on, yeah.
That's Spotify brilliant. Of wine. Yeah. I just thought of that.
You're very smart.
It's not normal. Because what they're doing is they're tagging stuff, looking at how you use things and then gradually building up playlists and stuff that they think you would like. And I guess that's what you're doing in a way.
Yeah, to some degree. Every month we bring you a box of wine that has a theme. So to give you an example, one month may be how wine changes, whether it has been or not in an oak bottle, or what makes up the liquid the wine is. So we explain you that. But every bottle is chosen to see which way you like wine best. So do you like it oaked or unoaked? Do you like wines that have a high level of tannins, for example, or you don't? So for every wine that you drink, we basically get a little insight about your taste and we feed it back to you. So we explain you what you like. And based on that, we can bring you wines that perfectly fit your taste and the two of you.
You see, that's a really good idea because for me, I think the wine world is full of quite a lot of snobbery based on price as well. Only very, very expensive stuff is like this and like that. And somehow you're frowned upon if you don't like that type of wine, but actually it just might not be to your taste.
Well, the thing I find is really strange. Is
and that's
that,
taking that out of it,
yeah,
isn't it?
But you might be faced with a decision. Someone says, oh, do you want this red or this red? And you're looking at the bottle and you're looking at the... You're trying to, you know, you go into like detective mode to try and work out if this is something you've even heard of before and kind of get a sense of whether it's something that you're going to enjoy before even tasting it. But I really like the approach that you guys have got, which is taste it and then you will know whether you like it or you don't, rather than trying to, you know, draw on all these kind of you know, detective clues about, you know, where this wine actually came from and what's it got in it.
And the, are the supermarkets the still the biggest place that people buy wine, Ollie?
They are by quite a distance.
And I think what's because buying wine in a supermarket is the most stupid thing you could possibly do, I think, because it's all done by country. So it's not done as Paolo was saying. Here are all the taste profiles under this, and they're all from different countries. They go, well, here's the Chilean wine, here's the Australian. I mean, well, that's just useless.
But that's the way most, I mean, you know, you walk around, you know, a wholesaler like Majestic, walk around an independent wine shop, most organised by country.
Why? Well, I don't understand.
I think that's because people sort of, where you travel, on some level, wine is about a journey and it is about saying, I love Italian wines. I had a great time in Tuscany. I enjoy Tuscan reds. Or I enjoy the south of France. I'm going to have, you know, wines from that region. Or I enjoy Italian, whatever it happens to be. So I think there is a bit about, I've been to that place and I've enjoyed that wine. I think, you know, you will hear people say, I prefer French reds to Italian reds.
What an overarching generalization.
No, exactly. It's a total generalization. But I think people do lean towards countries. And I think that it is such a complicated area because how do we normally navigate categories? It's by brands, right? And there aren't really any brands in the wine industry, or at least the wines are
Blossom
there.
Blossom Hill, you could probably say, but I'd avoid that like the plague.
Yeah, but the most branded wines are disgusting and, you know, and actually therefore what you've got is a lot of small producers who produce very, very different wines that can be totally different based upon, you know, I mean, wines in one region can be wildly different from each other based on the profile of the person producing them. But I mean, I was interested in what you were saying, because I do think price does have a role, which is, you know, if you've only got a budget of X pounds per bottle, you're in one group of wines. And if you're on 2X, you're on a different group of wines. And there is a game here where price does buy you quality. Not always, but price does buy you more.
It allows you to get quality. I mean, just to give an idea, you may have seen this data around already. If you were to pay for a bottle of wine £5, what you really get, the value of the liquid, is only 20p, because there are 2.16 pounds of excise duty.
I mean, that would just... Oh, I don't even imagine what that does to your insides. I mean, what's in it?
It can be high quality.
Vinegar.
Well, it can't be. No, can it? It can't be high quality at £20 almost 20p. A litre. Well, 20p a litre.
It's sarsens, isn't it?
There's nothing wrong with sarsens, which is the pickling vinegar.
Sorry, Paolo, I do carry on.
So if you move on and you get to a £10 mark, you get up to 15 times as much value in the liquid. So you get, like, say, £3.
Everybody's sussing that out, though, aren't they? Don't you think?
But are they?
People are buying less wine but higher price, aren't they? Is that the trend?
I think there are lots of trends going on. I mean, obviously, really Brexit has managed to increase the price of our wine because of currency fluctuation massively. Yeah. So currency fluctuation, I think there's been an increase of, 20% or something in the wine industry. And I think people remain confused. And I think it's the problem is that there isn't repetition. So you'll go to the wine, you'll go to the supermarket, you'll pick up a bottle, and the next time you're there, it may not be there again. And then on you go from there. And even, you know, even in wine clubs, it's not there again necessarily. And years differ year by year. I mean, it's so complicated. I mean, from what we've seen, about 13% of foodies are members of wine clubs. So it's still relatively...
Really? I'm surprised it's so low.
Oh, I thought that was low.
Oh,
I see.
Well, we have different takes. I'm a member of three, so...
Yeah, no, but you see, yeah, I mean, everyone around the table is a member of a wine club. So
or owns one.
Or owns one.
Yeah, in the case of Paolo.
Paolo owns his own wine
club. He's everyone's new best friend. Yeah. He didn't bring any wine, though.
But I think the... Do you know Chateau Musard? Do you know the wine? So Chateau Musard is a Lebanese wine.
Yeah, it's amazing. It's very expensive, though.
It's very expensive. It's made by Hochar family. And impressive. That is an astounding wine. And I felt really sorry for them, because when they got wars going on in Beirut, everybody just rings them up and are only interested in the vines. Are the vines okay? are all your staff all right as well, by the way? But you know, people are really, really great fans of this stuff. And it's been produced for... literally in that area for thousands of years, I think.
Yeah.
It's what, 40 quid a bottle?
No. You can get like a 2006 for, I would say, £25. Okay. Yeah.
In a restaurant, that's 40 to 60.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's usually about three times markup.
But what's really interesting about them is they say that the vintages differ wildly from year to year, because they will just take what's going on in that soil that year and the weather, and they make no attempt to try and make it consistent. Because they're saying, well, that's what it is. That's what the earth is this year, and that's the weather, and, you know, whatever. And as you say, that makes it even more complicated for somebody, isn't it? Because you're saying, I'm going to go, I love Chateau Musard, but actually I don't like the 2007, I don't like the 2009, you know, whatever it is, because they differ. And it is hard to navigate your way around all that.
It is, and I have a vivid memory of a trip to France as a university undergraduate, where we bought some cases of Corbière. Red wine.
Sophisticated. Then.
It was about £1 a bottle. So all I will say is, I look at Corbière and I just go, "Oh, I'm not drinking that," because I remember how awful that wine was. Now, I've actually never drunk a bottle of Corbière since. It's probably quite nice, but I kind of go, "Oh no, that's the one." You know, and that's the problem, is you form these ridiculous opinions based on an experience.
So if we just go back to what you're doing, Paolo, people take the mickey out of me, but I really like Chardonnay. I love Chardonnay. Not highly oaked, but I just think it's an amazing grape. And if you think that Chablis and Champagne or have got Chardonnay in, Burgundy, of course. And there's a particular taste profile that I like of that. So you would start to pick that up if I'm part of your wine club. And instead of me going to particular places that I know, or countries that I know do the sorts of, you know, Chardonnay that I like, you'd start really broadening and expanding my taste based on that, and pushing my boundaries of taste.
Exactly, spot on. When we look into your wine preferences, you're telling me now you like Chardonnays, you like them oaked, but not too much. Mm-hmm. So that is a pointer.
I like them a bit oily, actually. I like them a little bit oily, buttery.
So that tells me, for example,
not very fashionable, but
that you like them a little bit. Well, definitely on the full-bodied side for a white. The buttery taste that you talk about is caused by a thing called malolactic fermentation that happens with wine. We can know whether any wine has gone through that or not. I mean, it's information that you can get about wine. So basically, I'm noting down all those things. We will get to know a bit more about what you like with other wines.
And then you might say to me, here's an American Roussanne, which actually just is the same flavour.
Exactly.
Go for that for a change.
Yeah. So how many wines do you need to get obviously the more you do, the more you get, but to sort of start to get an interesting profile, how many...
Yeah, it's really interesting.
Yeah, after 24 wines that we've tried with us, we get to have a pretty decent idea.
A week
idea.
Or two, Holly.
I was about to say, so that's for a week.
After a fortnight.
So someone signs up to the club and they receive a case
a month with four different wines. The wines come in half size bottle, because we always want you to try two different wines in one go. So most often it's two whites and two reds. They revolve around the theme, and we want you to tell us which one you like best among the whites, which ones you like.
That's like going to the optician, isn't it? No, it's just like going to the optician, you know, because they say, is this lens better? And they keep turning the lenses over so that actually it's the comparison that looking
exactly.
for, not the actual.
The first time I did that, I found that so confusing. I'm like, I don't know.
But this approach is really interesting because it means that you don't have to drink a huge amount and you get to try different variations. And it's helping your algorithm learn, but it's also helping the person who is consuming it learn about what they prefer.
Exactly.
Which is, you know, so we've got that discovery element, but also the educational element as well, which is fantastic.
Sorry, can I just go back on the numbers? So I get a case, mm-hmm. it's got...
Four wines every month.
And then a bit, but I've got how many bottles? The half bottles?
Yeah, four half-sized bottles.
Four half-sized bottles?
Yes. Any wine that you like
and
try.
That's a day. Okay, so it's four...
Sounds about right, yeah.
You might have to up the deliveries if you're dealing with Ollie. Yeah.
Hang on, that was you. Hello. So it's four half-size bottles what you get. And what's the price for that?
So now we've actually launched the product with an Indiegogo campaign, so a crowdfunding campaign, where we are really launching the product. There are special offers. It gets to as little as the equivalent of £18. I'm saying equivalent because we are selling in dollars, just because we are selling also outside of the UK. But the price in pounds, again, is as little as £18 at the moment. Yeah.
And that's for the four?
That's for the four wines, yes.
So, yeah.
Might have a go at that, don't you think?
So you haven't brought any with you?
We almost sent somebody out to get some wine.
No, just
so that we could just have a conversation that felt like we were... Yeah.
He could have bought four half bottles with him at least, couldn't he?
Yeah,
Well, we know for next time.
Yeah, I know for next time. So would you like to expand your sort of taste in wine at all, Ollie? I know you're very, very, very well travelled, but is it the sort of thing that you would... Or indeed our foodies that you
So it's interesting. So I've been through a whole journey on wine in terms of sourcing from different places and things, and I've just got a new... local wine shop, Highbury Vintners, which is a lovely, lovely independent wine shop, which wins like best supply of Portuguese and Spanish wine. So they've got a really, really interesting display. Now, it's not a very big shop, but what's lovely is they have, a ridiculous number of wines, and it's really fun going in there. And that the only thing that I think worries me about that, and I have done wine clubs, I enjoy the process of going to a wine shop, chatting with someone, having the interaction, saying I quite like this, picking something out, seeing some crazy bottles with... you know, astronauts on them again. I'll take that. Looks like a laugh. Which actually is quite a good wine. And actually, you know, you sort of go on that journey. So that's the only thing that, you know, for me, I think food and wine shopping is splitting into two, which is you've got some stuff that arrives at your house automated and is like of zero emotional value.
Because you know what it is.
Yeah. Income.
Don't have to try
this. And then there are specialist people who are doing stuff, which might be, you know, specialist veg box, you know, the Riverfords or the Abel and Coles, you know, you've then got your, you know, so I suppose there's space for it, but I'm quite enjoying my local wine shop at the moment. But
you're so lucky because I don't have one.
Yeah.
They've been annihilated across the UK.
They have.
And again, because of the supermarkets. Mm. And even Odbins didn't survive, you know, for good reason. For good reason. But you know, they tried to disrupt it a bit, I think.
Yeah.
And even they got wiped out. And I think, I know you work a little bit, don't you, with Majestic?
Well, no, we've done.
They've managed to sort of create a sort of almost out of town wine warehouse type. You know, you go in and it feels like it's used to be a replacement exhaust centre, don't you? And you go in and it's just piled high with boxes. But you know, they have tried.
I mean, we've worked with Majestic over the years. We've worked with Naked over the years, which
Majestic,
are owned by the same company.
Owned by the same.
Yeah. So I think I don't personally like the Majestic shopping experience, in the sense I think, you know, you arrive, it's apparently predominantly male, actually, interestingly, their customer base. But, you know, you head in there and you pick up 12 bottles, you now pick up less. But it's not that engaging an experience. And I think the thing that I really love about wine, actually, is the tasting process, where you go in and someone goes, we've got five bottles open, why don't you try something different? Because there's nothing better than that. You go, never would have bought that, but I'll pick it up. And that for me is the fun part of wine buying.
I have to say, I think that is the beauty of these clubs, in that you often get sent something that you would never have chosen yourself. And so there is that, you know, I really like that experience of going to a place and choosing a thing and talking to the person who knows much more than I do about wine. And that's a great experience, but you know, you still have to kind of, you put on the spot, you have to make a decision, and you probably don't get to taste it there and then.
But Paolo, see, I get upset then when I open one and I really don't like it.
Mm.
Do you get that with your customers? I mean, if you're profiling their tasting, probably that happens less.
Well, you see, one of the privileges of our approach is that actually people that get our service, they are actually interested in discovering things that are off the beaten path and things that are challenging them a bit. So it's true that some of these wines they may not like as much as the others. I mean, it's part of the format.
Yeah,
exactly. But we don't bring obvious things because we want to test you and test your palate quite, you know, extremely sometimes. We bring you wines that are off the beaten path. So we actually see your reaction to things that are not the medium range or the very, you know, average wine. We actually bring you, to give an example, if we are testing how you react to the level of acidity in wine, some people love it, some people don't. Mm-hmm. So we are bringing you a wine which is quite acidic. Still pleasant for those that love it, but not for those that don't like it. Opposite to that, there will be a wine which is like the Roussan that you mentioned before, a much more full-bodied, oily wine, which has a very low acidity. So you will...
One of the things I find really interesting, though, about the world of wine is how we treat it as a category totally differently from anything else. So, for example, we probably all have a meat supply or fish place we go to regularly, and we will buy the same salmon, the same beef, the same chicken. You know, we find a trusted thing. Whereas in the world of wine, I mean, I only know one person who has... in quotes, a house red and a house white. And they have that on demand. They love a certain red, they love a certain white, and that's always available. So they dance around the other things. But
you're saying we just pursue novelty in wine in a way that we wouldn't.
Yeah. So, you know, is the idea of having a house wine in your house interesting? Where you have a red you know you love and you always buy that. So,
well, no, I don't do that because I just drink it all the time. I wouldn't drink tea. Do you know what I mean? If it was quite expensive stuff I really liked, I'd just be glugging it the whole time.
Well, I used to buy wine wholesale.
What do you think?
We would buy it in these huge, great big cases, and that would become the house wine for, you know, however many weeks or months until it ran out, and then you'd go and try a different one. But no,
but why would you go and try a different one? That's what I find interesting
usually it comes out of the cycle at the wholesaler.
Yeah. Well, so is that the game, though? Is the game of the algorithm that you keep learning, you keep pushing boundaries, and you keep experimenting within your taste profile but things you like?
Once we have discovered your taste, which happens after six boxes, as I said before, at that point you can decide whether you want to continue discovering
experimenting,
wine
or
if you want to be brought wines that fit your palate. At that point, it would be a personalized delivery with wines that cater to your taste, but we keep pushing a little bit your boundaries because... if we figure that you still like Bordeaux wines, which are great, but they are a little bit more mainstream than more off the beaten path, we will not just bring you four bottles of Bordeaux. It wouldn't make much sense, right? So we look at the features of those wines that you like, and we will try to expand from there. We've also noticed that people taste change over time. So that is another interesting thing that will come out of that. As you keep enjoying wines that fit your palate, you may shift in a direction or the other, and we will pick that up.
Do people's taste change for normal food, Ollie? Do you pick that up? So you know, I'm into rice and risotto, and am I still into those things 10 years later in general?
Taste buds change, and certainly change over time. We've been doing some work in the sort of end-of-life care space recently, and actually, you know, people want big, big flavours because actually, you know, a lot of your taste buds die and therefore you just don't get the level, you know, you want bigger tastes.
That's probably why I like the wine I do, because all my taste buds are dead.
But it's true. So I think ultimately, I think people are getting more sophisticated, certainly. And I think what's interesting is that, you know, new regions are coming into play, and I think people are being more experimental. People are discovering new things, which just doesn't happen at the supermarket. I mean, as you say, you know, you've got French, Italian... You know, I mean, and there's now even a burgeoning English, you know, wine scene.
Yeah, I mean, and if you go to Lidl or what's that other one? Aldi,
yeah.
Yeah, they've still only got about six different ones to try, though, haven't they? They've just got like six rosé.
But they're quite clever.
Wine.
You know, interestingly.
Their model's different, isn't it?
they buy big quality in bulk. I mean, you can debate the quality thing, but
I can't go in there because somebody might see me. But I mean, socially, that would be a good idea. But I admire the fact that what they're doing is they're pinning their colours to the mast, aren't they? In terms of, you know, these are our six whites, these are our six rosés.
But they rotate through their special buys, and obviously they can go into the market. I mean, it's the sort of Costco model, which you go and you go, it's the when it's gone, it's gone. It's like, I'm going to buy a quality wine, and in the end, it's going to be a draw because, you know, they do a great job at Christmas. You know, often the wines from Aldi and Lidl outperform the ones from M&S and Tesco's and Sainsbury's and Waitrose.
Can I just ask a question about M&S?
Mm.
So when you go to buy wine at M&S, it's got Marks and Spencer's on it. So I just think that's stupid. Because you can't then, say it's a nice $12.99 bottle of something and it's M&S's whatever. They've then got Marks and Spencer's on it. I can't then take that to somebody's house because it's got Marks and Spencer's on it. Because it doesn't look right.
It's
I could take it home and drink it, that's fine. But you know, you can't. I can't understand the branding and the thinking behind that.
But that's their whole model, isn't it? They basically are own brand everything.
But do you know, we were going to a dinner party, we're clearly totally disorganised, we have two small children, and we realised we didn't have any wine with us when we passed to Tesco's. You know, this one you end up buying wine in the supermarket. And they had a Tesco Finest particular grape, I can't remember what grape variety it was. And actually I thought, well, at least they're prepared to put their logo on that, and it's Tesco's Finest, whereas when there's an £8-9 wine that's in Tesco's, it could be a £4.50 wine they've marked up to £9. So actually, I found in that instance, the brand of Tesco Finest was a mark of said something to me that it wasn't just actually £4.50 wine. The next week would be you know half price and a deal.
And what did your host think though? Did they think, oh, cheapskate, he's forgotten and he's gone down Tesco?
Australian.
Oh, sorry, that's fine then. I would have noticed. Just great swathes of xenophobia.
After we had a huge amount of, you know, I think they probably just thought we were ignorant Brits who didn't know anything about wine.
Oh,
so we'll probably never be invited back. But no, I mean, after trying a few cocktails, I don't think they noticed it's a Tesco Finest. But I know what you're saying.
It just seems an odd thing to do.
Yeah.
So can I ask, Palette, where do you actually source your wine? We have a little break in a minute. I'm fancy some wine now we're talking about.
So at the moment we're getting wine from Italy, from France, Spain and Austria.
Only European at the moment? Then.
Only European at the moment. Mm. But we are looking to expand. So this is the beginning, basically. With the launch of the campaign, we're looking to grow a sizable amount of followers that will allow us also to expand the
and these
the
are people
network.
That you have direct relationships with in terms of the producers. That's fantastic. How do you source them?
Well, these people are all people that we build personal relationship with. We source directly. We don't go through importers, which is one of the reasons why we actually managed to bring, you know, good quality wine at a very affordable price. We jump, you know, like importers, distributors. We go straight from the producer to the consumer. I mean, part of the story is my personal background. I was born and raised in a wine region, so, you know, most of my family friends are wine makers or wine brokers.
Can't say that in England. Well, actually, you could, I suppose you could now, couldn't you, a little bit?
Yeah, there's a good amount of English wine production.
Well, that's fantastic.
I think you're trying to say most of your friends were winemakers or wine brokers.
That's how great is that?
That would be hard to say in Kent.
Yeah. Well, that's fantastic. So you've got a really great background.
So where was that in Italy?
In the northeast, between Venice and Trieste. It's a small region called Friuli, which is a little bit the home of white wines in Italy. It's the equivalent of Burgundy, if you want, for whites. Yeah.
But to your shame, you did start off as a real estate agent, though, didn't you?
I was a real estate investor for almost 10 years. That is true. Yeah.
And then you worked at Credit Suisse and all that sort of stuff. But you just couldn't resist going into wine.
Yeah, I had to go back to my roots. I'd been advising, you know, winemakers from my region, bringing the wines into the UK for a while. They've been trying to push me to make the leap. I wasn't ready to be a salesman because that is not my personality, to be honest.
You're too nice, fella.
But then I felt the call and this business idea came about. So I decided it was the right time to pursue it. Yeah.
And just a question before we have a little break. How difficult it is working with these producers and then getting it in half bottles? Because that's not usual.
Yeah, I was going to ask that as well. Mm.
Well, the half bottle is the second most used format. It's used a lot in hotels, restaurants and catering in general. So oftentimes producers have it. Maybe 10 to 15% of the producers have them already at hand. For the rest, in reality, the bottling machine is exactly the same.
Okay.
So it's not a complicated thing. You will have to convince the more conservative winemakers to make the effort of like changing the little setting.
But you're not going to deal with the conservative winemakers, are you, if you have any choice? So that's good.
Yeah.
I think the half bottle should make a big comeback.
I like the idea. Yeah,
I love the half bottle.
Because otherwise, you open a full size one to have a glass, and then you I just have a second.
I'm going to have half bottle of wine. Why is it that when you go back the next night, the second half is always so much smaller than the first half that you had the first night? Have you noticed that?
No, because there's never any left over.
Oh.
The theory of the half bottle is so that once you've had one bottle and you want a bit more, you can have one and a half bottle.
That's a good plan.
I do actually always remember my brother and I once got very excited when we saw a deal on Berry Brothers. We're like, oh my word, that's really good value for a particular Bordeaux. And we bought it, and then we realised they were half bottles.
Mm. But half bottles is great because you can sit down and like that is perfect for dinner, isn't it? You don't look too much of a pig, and per person, and it's just like just a perfect amount.
Yeah. We used to line them up at dinner parties. We'd have like six half bottles on the table. It always used to look very amusing.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't like magnums. That's just
don't you?
No.
Yeah, that's too much for one.
Is there any benefit from a winemaking perspective? Any benefit to a magnum?
Sometimes it aerates the wine better, doesn't it?
And also for sake of aging, it's true the wine ages better in bigger bottles. The bigger, the better. But to be honest, the wines that we drink most of the time are not aged longer than 5 years. So the differences are minimal.
And they're not designed for aging either. They're just designed to be, bottled and drunk.
Exactly.
Mm. Yeah. Shall we have a little break then?
I think we need to go and get some wine.
Yeah, so a little break and then we'll come back to wine again. We're having a whole hour of wine this week because we're just in the mood. So while we're doing that and we're having a little break, we're just going to talk to Ian Dorr of All Food Experts, and then we'll be back with Paolo again and Pulp Wine.
So I'm here today with Ian Dorr, who is Business Development Manager from All Food Experts. He is paying a flying visit to London from his base in Barcelona, and he's made time to come and have a chat with us on the Food Talk Show. And he's going to tell us a little more about All Food Experts and what he can do for innovation in the UK and beyond. So welcome, Ian. Can you just give us a quick summary of what All Food Experts is about?
Sure. Well, thank you, Jane. Yeah, All Food Experts is a community of food and drinks experts who are passionate about changing and transforming the industry. We exist to try to make sure that the food industry becomes more safe, just and sustainable for the future, because we see there are some huge challenges ahead for the industry, and the best way to get there is to innovate through collaborating together. So we have at the minute approximately 1,500 experts who are based all across the globe who take part in innovation projects for our clients to help them find the solutions for their problems, like a way of being an enabler for an R&D department or for the logistics department or a supply chain of small SMEs, startups, or tackling the big problems that we see the multinationals are industry interested in at the minute, such as food waste, and how the expertise within there can contribute their know-how in terms of what might be good solutions.
And can you give us a brief history of how All Food Experts came about?
Sure. So All Food Experts has actually been running now for about 4 years. Originally, it was part of a company called BlendUp, which is based in the south of Spain, who are powder food formulators. And they understood that there were many challenges that their clients would come to them to try and support resolving, but their internal R&D team couldn't tackle them. So what they did was they started to create this toolkit of third-party formulators who would come in and work with your internal team to help them solve these problems from time to time. They saw the value in this. It helped them deal with their clients and provide a better solution for them. And so in 2016, they started to provide this service externally, again focused on the powder blending industry, or part of the market. But at the end of 2016, we decided that the opportunity and the potential was so much greater. And so from November 2016, the team expanded, moved to Barcelona, and is now looking across the full food and drinks industry in terms of where we can go out and support startups, SMEs, and the multinationals in delivering innovative solutions.
Okay, so how can an SME based in the UK get involved with All Food Experts, and what can they offer, and what benefits can they expect to see from it?
Sure. So one of the things that we like to do is when we talk about clients or members of the community, we see the members as both an expert and someone who can benefit from the information within there. From the SMEs in the UK, we'd love them to come and get involved and share their story in terms of how they've been innovative, and also helping others within the UK market with the journeys that they've been on. I'm not saying to give away their secrets, but just help support people in doing the same thing, but also in terms of where they need support. If they have a problem within their business today, and they need that support to be able to get a new product to market quicker, or if they need assistance in terms of changing an existing product to meet the demands of the changing needs of end consumers, where we see more free-from products out there and people being more health conscious, then we have formulators and food scientists within there that can help people do that. And so we hope to be able to engage with them. We have quite a lot of experts based here in the UK already, but we also have experts across the globe. So they have very diverse knowledge, very diverse background, where they can offer different solutions and different considerations for the SMEs here in the UK to take from other parts of the world and decide what's right for them, what's the best way for them to move their business forward.
I see. So if somebody would like to get involved in a conversation regarding innovation, do they need to be an academic or a long-standing expert, or is this somebody who has learned through their own innovation process? Could they offer something to All Food Experts?
We see anyone as an expert. If they're passionate about the food industry and want to help make that change, whether it's like a single parent at home doing something in their kitchen to an SME that's there that's maybe been in the market for 2 or 3 years and are trying to expand, or someone who's maybe full-time working in a different industry but wants to make a difference and wants to make a change and is interested in the food industry and perhaps has some sort of transferable skill. Which can be adapted to it. So we don't want to label people in terms of you have to be working in the food industry already. If you're passionate to make that change, then you're welcome. And what we suggest people do is when they arrive, they create a profile to tell their story of what experience they have and why they're there. What do they want to gain from this? And to gauge with others. And for those who maybe are interested in the food industry but not currently involved, it's a great way to network with those people who are there in the industry now to find out the best ways to join in or to find out the projects that maybe they can take part in already.
Okay, that's interesting. You mentioned, though, trade secrets, and some of which are big secrets that people hold close to their hearts. What's the deal in terms of intellectual property, or how businesses can work together on perhaps a new product and all concerned remain protected and have a stake going forward?
What we do is our platform is free for anyone to join. So we say to our experts and to our clients who come to us, just be sensible about what information you put on there. Potentially we have clients who want to have some anonymity on there, and so we are quite happy to put those projects out there at first without someone's name on. And then at the relevant point in time where we're looking to help set up a contract between two parties, then is when we suggest they put down in paper who owns what in the process, because also we're very keen to make sure that the experts feel protected in this. Like, you know, this is their business, it's their intellectual property as well. And so we want to make sure everyone is comfortable and feels that All Food Experts is a community that can be trusted to support them in whatever way that is. All Food Experts ourselves normally suggest that if someone's very sensitive about their product or the end solution, then they have a non-disclosure agreement in place which clearly defines who legally owns what, and then there are no disappointed parties at the end of the process. At the end of the day, if you can't come to the right agreement with the client and the expert, then maybe that relationship is one that needs to be revisited and find someone, parties who are more value aligned. Because at the end of the day, this is the thing that's quite important for us, to make sure that value aligned parties come together, to make sure that they're both sharing value equally, rather than one party benefiting more than another.
Sure. Okay. And do you have any brief examples of companies or individuals that have been brought together through this platform?
We do. We've been running since January this year with a number of projects. Unfortunately, I can't give you any good examples from the UK right now, but this is why I'm here today, to hopefully get some interest from the UK innovators that we've been talking to. We have a successful project that's been running in Central America, where we've had a company that's come to us with an existing fruit juice beverage, which they're providing to the schools in Central America, and needing to reduce the amount of sugar content in there to deal with legislative changes that are going on by the government. And so what we've tried to do is help assist them with a formulator who can reduce the sugar in the product based on their previous knowledge of working in other businesses, to get a product that's suitable without deterring the other health impacts or the taste of the product for the end client. So it's been a great project. We've had some very good feedback from both parties involved, and hopefully there's actually going to be a long-term relationship forged between that expert and that business.
Great. Okay, so if any of our listeners would like to go and sign up, what do they do next?
So if they want to sign up, then go to www.allfoodexperts.com. Have a read about the information on there. At the top of the page, there's a call to action to get people to join in. And then it's a simple process just to complete your profile in terms of what experience and skills you have and what you're looking for, how you're looking to engage, and then get involved. Look at the projects that are ongoing now, look at the forums and the blog posts that we've got from other experts in terms of what they're talking about in the industry today, and start participating and engaging, and to tell their friends to get involved as well.
Brilliant. Okay, well, thanks for your time, Ian, and good luck with the project. Thank you.
Thank you.
So that was Ian Dorr, All Food Experts. Great, and now you're back with us. That's Paolo Zanelli of Pulp Wine, and my fellow presenters Guy and Ollie, and we're just really into the wine this week. So can we carry on the conversation, Ollie? I know you wanted to ask Paolo a bit more about it, because it seems like you're going to be a future customer. You're getting
well,
into
it's getting exciting.
You know, I have to say, one of the subscription boxes that arrives in my house is one called Cocoa Runners, which I honestly think I'm like, you know, I should be the sales director of Cocoa Runners on the basis of how often I recommend it. Essentially, what you get is you get a really beautifully designed brown kind of cardboard box that comes with your letterbox, and it contains 3 to 4 bars of single estate chocolate. It's about 15, 16 quid, and they have sort of profiles that say, I apologize for what I'm about to say, but they say things like, you know, John used to be an analyst at Credit Suisse, and then he realized that actually he hated banking and he loved chocolate. And so he founded this chocolate producer in Vietnam. And he's having a lovely time, and he makes, you know, 100 bars of chocolate a year, and he's very happy now. So there's sort of a tendency, that's basically the consistent story for everyone. There are a few people who were meant to be chocolate makers and are chocolate makers, but it's lovely because you get these amazing chocolate bars that come through the door. So the question I wanted to ask before
you're thinking of the wine thing, you're a little bit seduced here, aren't you?
I'm quite into the idea of specialist stuff arriving at our home, and the idea that you know, it's a conversation, isn't it, in some ways, where you sit down and you talk about wine. And I don't think my wife and I are clear about what our profiles are, for example. So what I was asking in the break was what you get at the end of the 6-month period or 12-month period in terms of recommendations and stuff, and what that looks like.
So after the 6th box, we have enough data to actually create your wine ID, which means that now we know pretty much in detail what you like in wine. So then we feed back to you what and why you like, and most importantly, personalized recommendations. So on your phone, you will carry a list, and each of you will have a different list because you will have different taste profiles, telling you which are the wines that fit yourself. Things that may be a little bit more off the beaten path. So to give an example, if we figure that you like a white wine, which has full body levels and very mineral, which means, you know, with a bit of a savory and salty taste, we may be recommending to try Assyrtiko, which is this wine from Greece, which is becoming popular now in London, which you may see at restaurants or wine shop, but you have no idea what it's going to taste. So you may not be really interested in trying.
Whereas that's the opposite of my wine profile. I know I hate it. Yeah. You know, and that's not nothing to say the wine's not good. It's just it doesn't suit my taste profile.
How do you handle couples who have different taste profiles?
Half bottles.
Half bottles, that's the answer.
But can I capture the fact that, so you have, we have two half bottles that arrive, you say you drink them together, mm-hmm. but I don't, I like one, my wife likes the other, you can put that into the system?
Yes, you can have up to four different profiles. So it's one for you, one for your wife, and
two for your children.
Well, yeah, Amira at 18 months is really exactly. ready to go.
Absolutely.
So one thing I'm really interested to hear about is, what aspects of these wines are you using to, where does the data come from? When somebody's kind of, so, I mean, maybe I need to break this down into more questions. When you've tasted, how do you rate the wine, firstly?
It's the vocabulary. What vocabulary do you use?
Is it just like a star rating, 1 to 5? And then how do you take that and kind of marry it up against, what are the nuanced details of that wine that you've just tasted and rated? And then how do you know that that is something that you now understand as a profile?
So, well, the easiest, yes, it's a star rating that you're giving to the wines. Mm. What we do on the background, we score each wine over at least 25 different determinants, which basically describe the wine in terms of the way it looks, the way it smells, the way it tastes. And for every wine we've got in there, we've got a scorecard, basically. Mm. With every rating that you give us, you are basically telling us your preference about each of those determinants, which we check and recheck and recheck with all the wines you drink, basically.
You're cross-referencing.
Exactly. Yep.
So as a user of the app, I mark 25 different things.
No, you only give it once, yes. Okay. So to give you an example, we were mentioning before oaked wines. Mm. If you prefer the oaked wine in the box that is dedicated to oaking, from there we infer that you like oaking, but it's not finished there. Mm. In couple of months, there will be another wine which maybe is not as extremely oaked as this one. Mm-hmm. It's more mildly oaked, and there we check again how you like it. Mm. So you see, these things get checked over and over again.
Yeah. You see, I really, really like that sort of big berry, blackberry type flavour.
Mm. Yeah, me too.
And sometimes there's some great Australian wines that do that actually. But sometimes, you know, there's that Shiraz thing where it's slightly peppery as well. And you'd be able to start really refining where I sit on that profile and what I like and what I don't.
Yeah.
So that's what I'm getting.
Yeah, in terms of taste, the most important things that we score are the six components of wine. So what wine is mainly made of, on top of water, obviously. So that is alcohol, sugar, glycerol, which is basically what makes the body level, the tannins, the minerals and the acidity. Every wine has different levels, and the way it tastes, it boils down a lot to this different components.
So what you're doing is you're rating us on those six scales, because yeah. acidity, I don't mind acidity, but my stomach doesn't. So mm-hmm. My acidity, you know, will be low, hopefully.
Exactly.
Quite like a little bit of minerality going on, don't know about you.
Mm, yeah, well, for me, it always really depends on the food that I'm eating as well. Like sometimes, you know, crack open a bottle because you just want to sit and relax and enjoy, but sometimes it just doesn't work without any food, you know, a bit of cheese, just some crackers or a full meal. And it's amazing how the flavor profile of a wine can change based on whatever you're eating it with. Yeah, yep. Hugely. Mm. We interviewed a guy from a company called Deli Pear, I think last year. I don't know if they're still around. And they have this concept of food and wine pairing app, where you basically send it a recipe and it looks at all the different kind of flavor combinations in there and then suggests wines that match with those individual flavor bits and pieces. Really, really clever idea. But I think, you know, that it's a complex thing, the idea of, you know, food and wine matching.
And are foodies citing this as a something they really want help with? Are you finding that, so Ollie? Are they just experimenting and wasting money and it's just a lottery? And
so we asked the question about in some of the research we did about is matching food with wine important to you? And, you know, we had different statements about how important it was and what you felt. And interestingly, it kind of divided into two sides that were basically on either side of the equation. So 23% are like, I always match wine to the food I cook. Mm. And there's 25% who I prefer not to match. You know, it's like, well, you know, I mean, you know, in the foodie world, I think it's like, you know, I have red, I have white, you know, it's like, it's not, you know, it's not that specific. Mm. And then there's, you know, there's 52% who will match food and wine for special occasions. And I think there's a complexity around what the word match means, because at a simple level, you know, the sun's shining, you know, it's a lovely day. I want to go outside and drink some rosé.
Something light.
You know,
yeah,
something light and something
don't
fresh.
Don't fall over after the first half an hour.
Exactly. So is that wine matching? Was that matching wine with an occasion? There's obviously a much more sophisticated thing, which happens in high-end restaurants, where they say, well, the profile of this will match perfectly with that, and this will set off this and that. Generally, I don't think consumers are doing that.
I don't think many people at home are doing that.
No.
Not with any degree of accuracy.
No.
I mean, I like to pretend to do that, but I have no idea what I'm doing.
But it's more in that I'm serving a big red because I'm serving venison with quite a heavy sauce, and therefore that kind of feels like it matches. But I think it's very broad brush matching, I think, is what's going on. I don't think people are trying to get down to the nuances of this goes that, which is why, you know, we've spoken to a lot of people in the wine industry who've tried to go down the wine matching thing, and they've just never made it work.
No, I haven't seen it work very well either.
And then there's lots of technology that's been built. So you look at a recipe and it says, we recommend this wine, but you're like...
Yeah, but I don't like that.
Yeah, or... Yeah, exactly. I don't like that.
I don't like Riesling, whatever it is. And
There's so many...
But therefore, somebody in their head's going, well, I know I should match that, but I don't like it, so I'll do something else.
Or I don't know what that is, you know. Yeah. And I think that it's sort of... I know Majestic did a lot of stuff with Jamie Oliver. It just didn't go anywhere.
Mm.
They just didn't find a way of making it happen.
And Paolo, is that your experience, that people aren't exactly matching? They just want to work out what they like?
So one of the things that we do, actually, we have a box dedicated to wine and food pairing, which gives the nuts and bolts of what happens, for example, in a restaurant, what you were saying before. That said, people constantly ask to be recommended what they should eat with the wines that we bring, because they have subscribed, so they know they are expecting the wine, so we do provide that. That said, we noticed that a lot of the wine that we bring to people is actually drunk after dinner.
Is that because they're it's more of a sort of social, you know, two people are going on a wine journey together?
That is part of it. Sometimes it's even more than two people. Sometimes we've got friends that get together to enjoy
the tasting.
Exactly.
Do you give tasting notes with it?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. On the online platform, there is basically with each box, there is a little wine lesson around the theme. Mm. As I said before, there are tasting notes for each bottle that you drink. So it's all in there. And you've got your wine journal where you've got all the wines you've drunk with us with their own ratings. Yeah,
that is fantastic, because the thing that I find the most frustrating about all the wine that I drink, and it is quite a bit, is that I can never remember what I've drunk and what I liked and where it came from or even how much it was. So I've been talking for so long about like building my own little mini wine app, which is just like whenever I buy something, I stick it in the rack and log it in at the same time.
But there is an app.
There are many for this.
I forget, there's one that's meant to be, I think it's the one industry standard one that...
Probably Vivino.
Yeah, you photograph the label and it gives you all the tasting notes and it tells you what it should cost.
Well,
yeah, I mean, I've never used
it. But this is interesting though, Ollie, because what it seems that people are doing with Paolo stuff is they're almost having like an event after dinner, like a bit of entertainment or a bit of something they can all talk about.
Which is brilliant.
But I think you're finding that there are certain sectors where that's happening. So whether it's cheese, whether it's wine, whether it's sort of sweets and chocolate, people are having a sort of moment where it's sort of a conversation piece of, ooh, let's try.
Yeah, but you don't share that chocolate you get though.
Do you know what? Well, we actually occasionally take it round for dinner parties. Actually, it's like rather than take a bottle of wine, we'll take around two bars of chocolate. It's like we
Tesco's
always get to eat it.
Chocolate.
The great thing is you then
get to eat it,
which is very important.
I'm afraid we've got to go soon. It always goes far too quickly. Just before I do, tell us your personal favourite grape. I always think of grape varieties when I'm classifying wine. What's your particular favourites at the moment that you would recommend?
So I personally tend to like red wines that are not very full bodied, so they're light to medium bodied.
That's more like Grenache, for example.
I'm gonna get that they actually have a nice mineal flavor and quite a high level of acidity, which is unusual for whites. So one grape that I really love at the moment is Etna Rosso, which is a very light wine from Sicily, from Mount Etna. Surprisingly light, because usually when you go so south, wines are very, very heavy. This wine has a lot in common with many Pinot Noirs from Burgundy, except that you are also enjoying, the flavor that is coming out of the volcanic soil. So it is really, really very...
Pinot Noirs are always less red, aren't they, really? They're not as dark in color.
Yeah, much lighter.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you like that. See, I'm the opposite end. I want something as near as fortified as you can get without being fortified. Because I just like the... the sort of viscosity of it, mm-hmm. being slightly, mm. quite yeah. like that. But you have to be careful because you can't drink as much. But
that is true. Yeah. Mm.
Mm. And in fact, I had an incredibly. I went to a restaurant in Bath at the weekend, which is really interesting. It's called Corkage. They've got a whole wall full of wine. There is no wine menu. What you do is you say what you like, and then they'll mm-hmm. and tell you what they tell them roughly what price you want to pay, and then they will get that wine for you because what they're doing is matching your flavour profile.
But that mm-hmm. only works if you know what you like, and so many people probably don't.
Although, and if you've got the language to know yeah, what you exactly. like, and I think language is one of the. It's interesting. We're doing. You're talking. Reminded me of this was. We're currently doing the Great British Cheese Awards, which is we've mm. done for the second year, and we have this terrible, terrible thing we have to do every Friday, where 10 different cheeses arrive in the office.
God, cholesterol!
It's awful. Oh. It's just awful. We have to try all 10 of them. It's great, and then also there's always bits left over, so then they get taken home, and then you have cheese all week. But it's when we sit around the table and
what's
try
the vocabulary to explain.
Yeah, you sort of say, oh, that's delicious, and it's again very hard. You might talk about the softness of it. You might talk about the rind. You might talk about the kind of, someone did say the other day that smells like the inside of a wet barn. And we're like, ah, oh, that's my kind of cheese.
Well,
yeah.
There's all sorts of crazy things that people say about wine as well. Like, you always remember the Gilly Goulden expressions of, freshly cut grass, or it smells of petrol, or, chemically. And it's just like, these things don't sound appetizing.
Well, I can't match the smell with the taste of wine at all.
Well, they often smell different than how they taste. Really complex. Mm. Yeah.
Well, I mean, so much talk about in terms of wine, isn't there? What can you say? Well, I think that what you're doing is really interesting. I think we should be educating people more and not just saying, this is the wine you should drink because it's the most expensive or it's got, the cachet that goes with it. I think we should be exploring what we like.
This is self-driven learning. Good. So yeah, it's not just like, oh, people should be more educated, so let's give them information. Yeah, it's like, let people find it out themselves. It's brilliant. Mm.
But there's also a generosity thing, which I have to say I congratulate you on, which is that actually it's not just about tying you into your platform. Mm. So part of my pleasure is I go to a wine shop, and actually if you've given me a list of things I can still do that. And actually I think that often, people try and get you into what you like, and then you get a subscription of that. Yeah. And actually, in the world of wine, there's an acknowledgement that you are
at a
restaurant.
And they feel like they've done a tick then. Tick, job done, and then they're on to the next customer. So. Mm. So we can find out more about you on pulp.wine.
That's correct.
It's a great URL.
Pulp.wine.
And you're currently crowdfunding.
We are currently crowdfunding on Indiegogo.
And I believe you've reached the target already, but people can still give you money.
Exactly. Well, really what we're doing,
we're
selling
product.
To
give me money as well, and not just Paolo.
Well, just give me wine, I'll be happy.
Yes.
I mean, really what we're doing on the Indiegogo platform, we've brought the product to the market, so people are able to buy the product there. We're not really crowdfunding for equity, so we're really selling the product, so it's now for sale. Yep.
Get on there. Yeah. Pulp.wine or Indiegogo. Thank you, Paolo Zanelli, so much from Pulp Wine for joining us. It's been really, really interesting. That's the end of another show.
Amazing.
You've been listening to the Food Talk Show, and obviously we're on radio stations everywhere. Practically, seems like now, all over the world. So you can listen to us at all sorts of places, or you can go on to our website, which is foodtalk.co.uk, with all those podcasts, hundreds now, all sorts.
Yeah, go and give it a download.
Thank you very much to my fellow presenters, Guy Routledge of Food Rush and Ollie Lloyd of Great British Chefs. We only mentioned your tortoise once this week. If you want to recommend any future guests, or you want to share any tortoise stories, please tweet us on @FoodTalkShow. And we really, really look forward to catching you next week. Bye now.